B-Pod Studios.
Clock hour of the Mike Fasanelli Show on radio and TV, brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise, online at landisbc.com. Tim Legler will join us in 7 minutes. Let's go to Omar in the barbershop. What's up, Omar? You're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
You know what time it is, man. I just wanted to add, I ain't going to jump on you for Tiger winning. Bet you slide on that one.
All I wanted to ask, did you predict that? Did you think he was going to win the Masters?
No, but I went down the book and I did win. I did picking.
Oh, you bet on him. Good for you, man. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm not going to let him out, but I'm just asking you if I'm wrong. In 3 years, he'll be what, 45, 46, something like that?
Tiger's 44 now, right?
I thought, no, he's 43, right?
He's 43 now? When's he going to be 44?
Yeah. All right, so.
He's got to win 4 majors to get the record, 3 to tie it.
So you figure Jack won his last ring when he was, what, 46, 47?
46.
Jack was in nowhere. He will be in nowhere near the type shape Tiger will be in when he's 46. Nowhere
possible.
Near.
Possible.
You know.
Jack Tiger, only had to win one to get to 18, though.
He may not pass.
Yeah, Tiger's got to win several to get to 18.
I think he'll tie him up, but he won't pass him.
Okay, so you say he gets 3 in the next 3 years?
He gets 3 in the next 3.
All right.
Without a doubt.
It's possible. Maybe he gets 2 this year. Maybe he bunches up. And grabs one of the British Open or the PGA. You're not going to win the PGA.
So I'm asking Tyrone.
He's not going to the U.S. Open.
The tie on the set of clubs?
No.
No, Ty is not taking up the game yet.
So Ty has no clue how hard it is to do what Tiger does then. It's the hardest sport.
No, he has a clue.
Yeah, it's the hardest sport in the world, man. I'm telling you. Nothing's harder than golf.
Yeah, hitting a baseball is harder.
Than golf?
Yes. You kidding me? Did you watch that guy when the Mets come in 42-degree howling wind, cold weather, and try to hit that 99 that he was throwing up there last night to close out that game? You don't think that's harder than hitting a stationary golf ball?
You can get 10 guys that lift 300 pounds over the head and they couldn't hit the ball 20 yards.
Listen, I get that. It's hard to master golf, but exactly. The hardest thing to do is to hit a baseball. A moving baseball thrown at that velocity. I mean, come on. That guy was blown. Did you see him throw last night? How did Seattle let him go? That dude's deadly.
They got some prospects, and they wanted to get out from under that Cano money. Because remember, the Phillies were in the mix to get him.
Well, Diaz wasn't making any money, was he? Like 25 years old.
But they took on Cano's contract.
Oh, okay.
And the Phillies were in the mix to get him, and the Mets swooped in with an extra prospect because the Phillies really wanted that guy. Yeah. He's the best closer.
If
they're ahead, you can forget about
it. He's deadly. Drew in Westchester, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Drew.
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
What's up, Drew? How you doing?
Good. Welcome back from the Masters.
Thanks,
I definitely agree with you, man. I think hitting a baseball is probably the hardest thing to do in professional sports, without a doubt. But as far as my Sixers point, I think last night we restored order a little bit. I think, you know, it was nice to see, everyone getting involved and not having to rely on just one player to try to carry us through the game like the first time with Jimmy Butler and I guess Embiid so much. So I thought that was just a well-rounded game, and if we keep playing that same way, there's, you know, the sky's the limit, I think. And, you know, going versus Toronto, I think we still have a chance.
They played that way against the Nets. I'll keep saying it. All right?
Yeah.
It's a little different, man. You give me a better frame of reference, and they play that kind of game against Toronto, I'm in.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. If they can play that type of game and keep it consistent going into versus Toronto, then definitely, you know, I'm in too.
Yeah, but they would have to play that kind of a level against Toronto for me to be convinced. Yeah, you know, they're playing that kind of a level against an inferior team.
Right. So, anyway, what's your thoughts on the NHL playoffs? What do you think about Tampa and Penguins being down 3-0?
The what?
The NHL, yeah, right?
What do those initials stand for? Who's down 3-0?
Tampa Bay and the Penguins.
Yeah, I think the Penguins are down 3-0. The Penguins are up 3-0?
No, they're both down
3-0. Oh, they're 3-0. Both down 3-0? I got to be honest with you, I haven't followed it. When the Flyer season's done, I'm out on the NHL, man. I get too many other things occupying my brain.
Yeah, right on. I just thought you might have an opinion, just being that there
I really don't have an opinion. You have an opinion, Tyrone?
After Legler, I want to ask you about something. It was Ovechkin, they're up 2-0, they're playing, and he actually knocked a kid unconscious in a fight last night.
Who did?
Ovechkin did. Yeah, I saw it.
Strong guy.
And it's just, I was disturbed. And maybe I shouldn't be, but
it was a fight?
Yeah, it was a fight. Uh-huh. And they were down 2-0 at the time. They were up 2-0 in the series, Washington. Uh-huh. And he ended up hitting the kid straight down the pipe 3 times, knocked the kid unconscious. And the reason I say kid is he's 19. He's the youngest player in the playoffs.
So wait a minute. The Lightning and the Penguins are down 3-0 in this series.
Well, the Penguins are.
The Lightning are, too.
Oh, yeah, I haven't been watching that one. I saw some of the Penguins series.
All right, so there's no way that the Lightning go out 4-0. This game is in Columbus, too, tonight.
Ooh.
And the Islanders are at Pittsburgh. Neither team goes down. Lightning and Penguins both win tonight. All right,
that's your prediction.
That's my prediction for my NHL playoff prediction.
That's nice of you.
thank you. I mean, I had no idea that they were down 3-0. That's my fault. I should be paying more attention. But there's not a chance in hell that a caller is going to want to talk about the NHL playoffs, and our last caller wanted to. Like, that's the way I'm figuring.
Well, there's bigger fish to fry now.
When the Flyers are not in the playoffs, nobody's checking in on the NHL in this with this fan base.
Not with the Sixers where they are and the Phillies being decent again.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, I apologize. Yeah. He knocked out the 19-year-old kid.
Yeah.
In the first period.
A rookie.
It's a country mate, isn't it?
Yes.
Svechnikov.
Yeah,
I'm watching on replay right now.
Someone said it's the first Russian fight in the playoffs.
Yeah, he knocked him cold. Right hand. Boom. All right, let's go to Bob in Hanover. Bob, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Mike. How you doing
today? What's going on, man?
Not much. Last night's game reminded me of a General Patton statement. Lead, follow, or get out of the way, and it applies to Ben Simmons. He was doing a lot of following, and game one, he got out of the way. But last night was just pure leadership, and he said, follow me. And he doesn't realize how much that affects the rest of the team and how his leadership on the court, his aggressiveness, just impacts everybody else on the court.
Listen, whoever got to him, whether it was him looking in the mirror, whether it was people in his family telling him, listen, you got to take charge. You got to engage. I mean, you can't play timid. You got to attack, attack, attack. That's what you do. It's the thing you do best is attack. And last night he got the message.
Now, going forward, what do you think? Do you think he eases up? Do you think he continues to be aggressive?
I mean, who knows? Bob, I mean, I can't tell with this kid, but it seemed to me he learned a really big lesson last night by playing the way he did and he getting the confidence to play that way. I can't imagine he could peel off it now, right? I would expect that he plays the same way against this, especially against this team. Now, I don't know what's going to happen against Toronto because, you know, the better defenders seem to wall him off, but he found a way to beat them last night with his quickness.
When he's down low, and his length, he's unstoppable, and he's got to understand that. I mean,
yeah. Now, listen, we suggested about 5 things they had to do in that game last night. They did all of them. They really did. They. And I'll give credit to the coaching staff for adjusting to what they didn't do in game one.
What did you think about that flagrant one? You think that should have been a 2 on Embiid?
Nah, flagrant one was good enough. You don't want to throw a star player out for that in the playoffs. You know, people don't want to see that in the league, to be honest with you. Dave in Center City. Dave, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Oh, we have legs now? All right, hold on a second. Hold on, Dave. Ladies and gentlemen on the line right now, of course, the czar of the Telestrator, analyzing the NBA playoffs, and I want to get his spin on this Sixer team and what they are. The great Tim Legler joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Timmy, I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Michael, buddy, good talking to you, man. How's everything?
Everything
pretty good today, right?
That was quite an exhibition last night, and I want you to make sense of game one to game two.
I think what game one, basically, I think what happened, you had too many guys on that team just not play well, right? And I thought also the mentality of Ben Simmons was not what it needed to be. And what I saw out of him at the start of game two, for me, is how he should play every night. And what I mean by that is, I think there are times that Ben Simmons premeditates that he's going to make a pass or make a play. And he doesn't just read what's there in front of him when he uses his straight-ahead speed. Because for me, the best play for the Sixers, when he comes at you with a head of steam, whether that's open court or off a ball screen, whatever it may be, and he starts to turn the corner and he's underneath the foul line, the best play for that team is for him to then start thinking about being a scorer. And I thought that he set the tone very much in that regard at the start of the second game. So he played much better, obviously. J.J. Redick was a non-factor in game one. Tobias Harris, both of those guys played much better in game two. But I thought the tone was set at the start in a building that I know had a lot of anxiety in it. They needed a good start, and then they needed somewhere in that game some separation. They got that, obviously, at the start of the third quarter with the way that Embiid played. So for me, it may sound simplistic. Hey, guys played better, but I think that was a big part of it. But I also think the mentality of Ben Simmons in playing to his strengths and not being so predictable and attacking them and getting into the chest of Jared Allen and taking it strong to the rim and finishing plays, because that's the best play for the Sixers on that possession. I thought he did a much better job of reading that.
No question about it. They got the ball off the glass. He beat him up the floor and he attacked. And it's peculiar to watch him play, because there are games when he'll try the semi-attack and then they wall off with that defense. They bring a couple guys in front of him. They gate him. And he gives it off to a wing and then he disappears. What is the mindset of the guy? From game to game, I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's one of the most mystifying players to watch play, because you know, the physical tools at 6'10" and the speed and the athletic ability and power, and he's actually got a soft touch, you know, on finishes. And there are games that he looks really so hesitant and so confused about what he's supposed to do because of how teams play him and the amount of room that they give him. Now, most of his strong take opportunities in game two were in either flat out open court situations or, you know, semi early offense situations. You know, they weren't really coming once they got over half court and then the ball moved a little bit and he ended up with it and then he got to the rim. Like that, he still struggles with that because teams are so far off of him, and we've seen it get really to such an extreme. It looks ridiculous at times how far his defender is off of him in the half court, and that's when he looks like he's really confused. Like, what do I do? There's so much traffic in the lane. I've got 10 feet of space here. I don't know what to do because I can't really shoot a pull-up floater. I mean, he needs to get all the way where it's a layup or like a running hook shot. He's good with either hand. But when there's that many guys under the basket or in the restricted area and there's 10 feet of space before you get there, that's when he really looks most confused about what to do. And then you'll see him just run a dribble handoff, give the ball to Butler or Redick, and then he disappears for the rest of the possession. I completely agree. That's why game two was so important for him at the start, that he had so many opportunities downhill in the open floor where he could, there was nothing else on his mind other than beating those guys down the floor, even if Jared Allen was back there and he was going to attack him and force that guy to make a play on him at the rim. I love the mentality of being a scorer once he gets below the foul line, because I think too often he's already looking around, his head's on a swivel, like, where, you know, where do I make a play for somebody? And the best play for their team is for him to continue that possession by getting it all the way to the basket. I thought it just, when I watched him last night, I'm like, this is what Ben Simmons should look like every night. And he doesn't. And I know how frustrating it must be for Sixers fans as well.
Yeah, it is. And my kingdom for an 8-footer too, when they wall him off, because he's got that shot and he just won't take that thing.
I agree.
It's just making me nuts. All right, so last night, what adjustments did they make on defense? First game, the Nets were really running simple high screens. There was no fight through, no help defense, and they were getting open shots galore with their quick guards. What did the Sixers do last night?
Well, yeah, you're right. First of all, game one, I mean, D'Angelo Russell's eyes were as big as saucers, because he's saying, I'm getting these ball screens at 27, 28 feet. There's no defender on the screener, and that was usually Embiid or Marjanovic, within 20 feet of the guy. So any guard in this league, you come off and I've got one screen on my man, and now I've got like 10, 12 feet of space coming off of that, and I have everything at my disposal, pull up mid-range, shoot a three. You know, if you finally do come out, I just turn the corner on you and get all the way to the rim. He did whatever he wanted. He never at any point felt uncomfortable. I thought they did a better job of it. First half, not as much. I thought they did a better job in the second half, just trying to at least deny him the ball a little bit more so he wasn't coming off of dribble handoff unimpeded. And I thought Ben Simmons in particular did a better job of that. But truthfully, what happened, like, if we're being honest, what happened was the Sixers blew the game open in the first 4 minutes of the third quarter, and their offense, Brooklyn's offense, sort of went out the window at the same time. And what they were doing that was so effective, they started going a little bit more for the home run ball and the kill shot and trying to get back in the game. And D'Angelo Russell was less of a factor as that thing went from, you know, 1 point to 20 in the blink of an eye, and then it was 25. And so he really got taken out of the game, I feel like, more by what the Sixers were doing to them on the other end of the floor, and the offensive game plan went out the window because D'Angelo Russell was still getting some space in the beginning of that game, and I still think that's a major concern for the Sixers because you're going to have Embiid or Marjanovic on the floor almost at all times, and they're just not comfortable being out there close to their man when they're setting a screen. And so those guards, Russell in particular, they still have too much space in my book, and I think Russell's going to have a big game three if they don't at least close that gap a little bit, or maybe at times maybe even play a little bit smaller.
Yeah, or fight through screens. That's another thing they can do. Like, they've got some.
Yeah, you can fight through a screen, but here's the problem. Here's the problem. D'Angelo Russell is not a pure three-point shooter, but he's good enough, and he can get hot. So if you're going to chase him, let's say he's getting a ball screen, he's got the ball, and particularly when he's going to his left hand, and you're going to chase him, he's so good at coming off the screen and then doing something that they call now, it's called a snake dribble, where you come off, and then actually you almost go completely around your screener where you're going back then into the direction that you just came from. It makes it so hard for Jimmy Butler or Ben Simmons or whoever's guarding him to chase him around the screen, and then they have to continue back looping almost all the way around the defender because they snake dribble back where they came from. It's too much ground to cover if you don't have somebody up there slowing down his progress. So it's easier said than done, just fight over a pick, because these guys are crafty with the ball, man, and they can really use that screen to create enough space and separation where now they're in a real comfortable place to shoot the basketball.
Talking to Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst. Tim, just one other strategical question, and that is T.J. McConnell had the rotation last night. They were using Jimmy Butler and Tobias with the ball when they needed to. Is that the right move to keep him off the floor in a playoff series?
Look, you know, TJ brings a lot to them in terms of energy and spark, and we know what he brings, and but there are certain times when you just have to go with more talent, and I think that was a situation that they did last night. Tobias Harris looked like a completely different player. He was probably embarrassed by the way he played in the first game. He was much more aggressive. Jimmy Butler was fantastic in the first game, didn't have to do as much in game two, but I think both of those guys more than capable of getting their own offense against Brooklyn. And TJ, you know, as many things as he does that help you, you know, in this series, maybe you need more firepower. And so I was kind of happy to see that they went in a little bit of a different direction, and it clearly they broke it open. But I will say this too. It's amazing. Even Mike Scott is a good example of a guy that he looked a lot more comfortable when they were up 20 shooting the basketball.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily get fooled by, you know, how well some of those guys played once they could breathe a little bit, because I was joking last night on SportsCenter before the game. I said they were handing out sedatives for every fan that came in the building, because I knew there was going to be a lot of tension in there last night. And there was, obviously. They couldn't put them away in the first half. That felt like it should have been a 15-point lead for the Sixers at halftime. It was weird. It's a one-point game. But, man, did they come out of the locker room and just end that thing quickly. And then everybody felt more comfortable shooting. Hopefully that carries over to Brooklyn. But I really think they've got a fight on their hands, and I'm not going to be shocked this thing gets shrunk to a three-game series when it's 2-2.
All right, so I got to ask you the ultimate question here, because people are connecting the dots now. They were so impressive. Now they're connecting the dots to the second series potential. What's the ceiling for this team as you see them right now?
I said it last night. I tweeted this after the game. That's what it looks like when the most talented team in the Eastern Conference plays desperate. The question is, Mike, are they mature enough to harness that every night? You know, you can't pick and choose your spots when you're going to have to play better teams than Brooklyn. You know, if they play desperate the way that they did last night, this is a team that can represent the East in the finals. There's no question in my mind. Now, if you asked me right now and forced me to lay money on it, I'd probably still put my money on the Bucks. I think they've been the best team in the East all year. I think that they don't have any holes. They got great role definition. They're incredibly well coached. I think they have a massive advantage in the coaching department. And so I would probably still lay my money on them. But the Sixers at their best, the way that they looked last night, in the second half of that game, that's a team that can get to the finals. The question is, are they mature enough and committed enough and focused enough to do that, like every single night, particularly if they get past Brooklyn, they're going to play two better teams.
Well, that's why I'm going to ask you one at a time here, because you mentioned the Bucks, but Toronto is the first team. Are they capable of winning that series the way they are?
Yeah, they definitely are. Look, Toronto's a deep team, and they're a good team, obviously, and they got a star that plays both ends, and that's a team that's pretty complete as well. But that's a team also that's got some warts. I think they have a hard time now when they play bigger with Gasol. I think that's not a very good defensive team for them, and it manifested itself at the end of the game when Augustine gets a wide-open pull-up three because Gasol does not want to switch that, and they're better with Ibaka and Siakam at the 4-5 in defensive situations, but Marc Gasol's an all-star. So they've got to work through that. Kyle Lowry, who knows? Is he gonna go through these, you know, another one of these prolonged shooting slumps in the postseason? They might not survive that if that's the case against a team like Philadelphia. Philly at their best, when those guys are flowing the way they were last night, and Embiid is that physical and determined to not take the bait on what you want him to do, and he's just going to continue to drive that at you even when he has space, and take it into the paint and just overwhelm you physically. When he plays that physically and Simmons is that determined to break you down and finish as a scorer, there's no question in my mind that Philadelphia can beat the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. But they've got to play at peak, man, close to 100%, a lot more often than we see them do it. That's where the concern comes in. We all know it. They're not a very consistent team with that type of effort. And they need to play like every night they're facing an elimination game. If they can somehow muster that, and it's easier said than done with younger players, but if they can muster that, then this is the most talented team in Eastern Conference. Their starting lineup is good enough to overcome anything they're going to see defensively.
All right. Even with this coach, right? We're good.
Look, I do think they're at a disadvantage. And not just this series. I think that would be the case. I would say going forward, either of the next two series. I think that's definitely a disadvantage. I like to see more things mandated on this team offensively, Mike. I watch them sometimes and I just say, my God, if I could coach a team like this with this kind of talent and mandate through structure and sets and continuity and ball reversal and have a plan, not just like, hey, Ben, go down in the post when you feel like it. No, we have these three things as wrinkles in our offense. Well, we're going to run some stuff now to get him a back screen at the elbow and roll him into the post. This is a mandated set play because that's a really big part of our offense that we don't utilize. You know, how to get Joel Embiid the ball in easier spots. He doesn't always have to work so hard at 15 to 18 feet to beat his man. Same thing with J.J. Redick, who runs, you know, massively without the ball. A lot of it he gets on his own. But there are other very simple, quick-hitting things that you can run for J.J. Redick to get him something easier. So he doesn't have to run 12 miles every possession to get open. I just think there's a lot that is not forced upon these players offensively. Yeah. And it's more like, you know, you're kind of watching them play because you have so much talent. There's more there. And if you really want to max out who they are, potentially have a parade for this team, I just think that's got to happen, but it's not going to happen on the fly in the middle of a series. That's got to be put in training camp. That's got to be, you know, something that you've thought about in the offseason, and you come in and now you put these things in offensively. It's too late to do it now. You can add a thing from game to game, but overall, it's just not enough structure for me or enough, you know, mandated ball movement reversal and player movement with a purpose. There's not enough of that on this team. So I hear what you're saying, and I know there's a lot of anxiety in the city about that. Hopefully, these guys play hard enough. They've got enough talent to overcome that.
All right. Timmy, always a pleasure, man. Great stuff. We'll talk to you.
All right, Mike. Anytime, Mike.
Here he is, Tim Legler. He laid that out, and that was... And he's right about that, because as we were screaming at game one, mandate something. Adjust to what they're doing to beat you. All right, we'll take a break. We're a little late for a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with your phone calls. A couple open lines at 610-622-0975. Mike Masnelli Show on 97.5 The Fanatic on NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
4:34, Mike Vesnelli Show. Let's get a Twitter poll update brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons from Miss Natalie Eggenhoff. Nat.
Thank you, Mike. Over 1,300 votes on this one. How many games will it take for the Sixers to beat the Nets? 29% say 5 games, 58% say 6 games, 13% say 7 games.
All right. Sounds good. By the way, we talked about the ticket raids for the Mike Miss Open. Mm-hmm. Where you can win a twosome in the golf outing by going to a Corona Premier ticket raid. Wednesday, April 24th, The Post in Philadelphia from 7 to 8. So write down these dates. Wednesday, April 24th, we'll have a ticket raid at The Post in Philadelphia from 7 to 8 p.m. The next night, Thursday, 25th, Duffer's Pub in Concordville from 7:30 to 8:30. And then the following May 1st on a Wednesday, Station Tap House in Doylestown from 7:30 to 8:30. So we're all over the Delaware Valley.
Yeah.
We'll take a raid. And we were told today 35% of the tickets for the golf tournament have already been sold.
Pretty exciting.
It's great. I can't wait. One month from today.
And Natalie will be dressed in, first time ever, golf attire.
Yes, it is. It's the first time for me. So I tried on.
You will be in golf shirt and skirt.
Yes, I will. So
Tyrone,
I've come around.
Will you be in Tiger gear?
No.
Will you be going red and black?
No, I'm wearing the shirt you got me. I'm wearing it there.
Yeah.
I have many visors, so I'll wear one of my many visors.
Yeah.
And khaki pants or shorts, depending on the weather.
Khaki pants or shorts,
depending on the weather.
All right.
We don't know what's going to be.
I tried on. I tried it on. It looks good.
That's good.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't worn a polo shirt since high school, since I was forced to wear one every day. So.
Well, there you go. It's been a new leaf for Natalie.
A
new chapter in the Natalie Eggenhoff life. Gary in the Northeast, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Gary.
Mike and Mayor.
What's good up, Gary?
Hey, it's been a few years, but glad to see you're doing well. Reese Hoskins.
Yes. Reese is out of the lineup tonight, by the way, because of his ankle.
Right.
Yeah, you heard his leg sliding last night.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
It did not look good. And I think this is a bigger story than it's made out to be.
Well, I mean, he continued to play, right?
Well, he continued to, well, how many players have we seen continue to play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just sore.
I don't know, man. I watched the replay a few times.
They thought there was something really wrong with it. They would have taken him out of the game. I think it's just sore. He jammed it a little bit.
You sure about that?
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure.
All right.
No, I'm not a doctor. I'm not sure, obviously. But so I don't think he broke his leg or anything.
I don't know, man.
He's available for pinch hitting tonight. So there you go. That's the latest we have on it.
He's available for pinch hitting?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
There you go. There goes your worries right at the window.
Not yet. I got to say. I got to call out Ty a little bit here. It's been like 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks, and there was pictures all over the internet of Tiger hanging out with Trump. So yeah.
He's a Trumpian. I didn't know that.
He is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it probably goes like way back. With, you know, Trump was engaged in acquiring golf courses and stuff, so I'm sure that he wanted to bond with the best. No, it's a golf thing. It's really a golf thing. So, Tiger, at that point, Trump wasn't president, and so I guess they formed that association a long time ago. Right? What are you going to do?
You know the part is? Calling me out.
Well, yeah, he's saying you should have a dislike for Tiger because Tiger's the Trumpian.
Should I?
But no.
And Ty has never revealed his political affiliations.
No, people are entitled to follow who they want.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Listen, if I start nitpicking into people's lives, I'm not going to. I already don't like enough people as it is. You want me to hate more people?
That is true.
Let's start finding more reasons not to like people. Oh, this guy does this, and this guy drives this kind of car, and this guy listens to this type of music. Like,
no, I'm not anti-Tiger because he's pro-Trump. I didn't even know that. I was anti-Tiger because he was a miserable creep for most of his life.
People were tweeting me yesterday saying, how could I be okay with him winning when he cheated on his wife? I'm like, so doesn't mean that he's not a good golfer because he's a bad husband.
I got to find every single guy who cheated on their wife in professional sports and decide to hate them. I'm pretty sure I'm going to hate a lot more than Tiger Woods.
Because I'm a woman, so I'm supposed to not respect his game.
So that's where you guys get it, you pay too much attention to that social media avenue.
Well, a lot of people were saying stuff.
Block. My finger's tired. I'm going to bed. 610-632-0975. Mike Masnelli Show, 97.5, The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, yeah, it's 4:45. We're talking about the Sixers' big win last night. Philly's big loss. They're back at it against the Mets tonight. It's Steven Matz versus Nick Pavetta. Oh, boy. This is going to be a rather odd observation, probably this early in the season, and I probably shouldn't make it. But is it me, or has JT Realmuto been a little underwhelming so far? In his first hit with runners in scoring position last night, he really lit it on fire.
I think it's too early.
Too early? All right.
Yeah, it's still April, middle of April.
All right. Too soon. Just checking.
And I think it's too soon.
Checking to see if anybody else thought that.
No, I have seen people write about it, tweet about it, but I think it's too soon.
Okay.
All things considered, I think his defense has been, his arm throwing guys out every game I've seen. He's done some of them, just some conflicts with the Sixers. Good arm.
Yeah, really good arm. Good catch.
Seems like.
Well, yeah, I mean, good catcher, but I don't know, like, he hasn't had an influence on this staff yet because they really haven't pitched well.
But can you have an influence on guys that stink?
Well, Nola doesn't stink.
No, Nola's problems are Nola's, though.
He doesn't stink.
No, he was pretty good. His last outing in Arietta was much better. And
Eflin, he had first two good starts and then a horrific start. Well, here are the numbers against Steven Matz, in case you're interested. McCutcheon's 2-for-4. Segura is 1-for-3. Bryce Harper has 17 at-bats against Matz, only he's 4-for-17 against him.
He'll still get 2 walks.
Realmuto's 3-for-9. Kingery, Jetpack's 3-for-7.
There you go.
Gets Matsy. Hernandez, 3-for-9. Altair is only 1-for-5. Franco's 2-for-5. So small sample size. Steven Matz, a 1.65 ERA so far this year.
So
Pavetta, 9.45.
Yes. And Eichhoff up.
They brought Eichhoff up.
Anderson back down. He pitched really well yesterday. He'll be back, obviously. So. Is he up? I know they need arms because they don't have any days off coming up in the way they've been using the bullpen. Do you think he ends up pitching tonight because Pavetta gives you 4?
Are you Eichhoff?
Yeah, and he comes in and has to be like your long man tonight?
Maybe. Well, maybe it'll give him a start down the road.
Maybe.
John in Newcastle, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. John.
Mike, I was doing yard work, and I heard it was your anniversary show. I had to come in.
Oh, thank you very much. John, thank you, sir. 1 year right here on NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Hey, what you're going to have to do maybe today or tomorrow if you have time is go back and think of this first year and your top 5 guests.
Top 5 guests?
Maybe top 5
for
guests
this year that were on TV?
Or top 5 interviews or anybody you've called out on the carpet.
Yeah, well, Charles co-hosting is obviously stands out.
Oh, yeah, Charles does. Hey, I have a quick citrus point.
By the way, the boys at the NBC Sports Philly brought an anniversary cake. I assume they're showing a cake on TV. No? Booney's not showing the cake?
They got
graphic for a cake or anything? Nothing? We get nothing?
Like a
red ribbon something?
I don't even know if they pay attention.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
You bring up a great point about JT, though. Right before I came on, you were talking about him. How many times has he come up this year with runners in scoring position, and he has not come through for them?
He's not hit early. He hasn't. And last night was his first hit with runners in scoring position. So, listen, I think he's a good player, and he may be just adjusting.
Real quick about the Sixers, mm-hmm. though. It was interesting how Jimmy, you know, Brett got fiery. I read all that today. Brett got fiery in the locker room like he should. And, you know, Jimmy, mm-hmm. Jimmy loved that. You know, Jimmy had that coy smile when they were talking to him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but you know how baseball, when you have the soft manager, you go with the tough manager or vice versa if you make a manager change.
Yeah.
If they have to make a change with Brett, if they fail in the second round, will they bring in, you think, a more of a disciplined guy that, you know, these guys have been...
Let me ask you a question about the NBA. Name me five guys who are in that category of disciplinary coaches in the NBA. There's no more disciplinary coaches.
None of them are coaching anymore, Mike.
But Popovich, the only one left. That's it.
I know, you're
right.
It's
a player's game now, man. I mean, there's no more disciplinary coaches. This is the NBA.
Oh.
Holmes, I make $30 million. How much you make? You going to tell me what to do? Stop.
So,
what?
Radio's ahead of TV. There's a little delay. They had a fantastic
graphic.
TV?
Yeah, they did.
Beautiful graphic.
Nice! Like the 1 year anniversary?
Yes,
it looks really good.
Is there a cake in there?
There is a cake in the graphic.
Nice!
Oh, I missed the cake.
Oh, it's a little cake.
I asked Booney to send it to us so we can see
fantastic.
It.
It's a really good graphic, so that's on
thanks,
us.
Booney.
It's fantastic.
Happy anniversary.
I'm glad we put the idea in their heads.
No, there's no way they could have put that together that quickly.
Really? Yeah. Did they know today was our anniversary? They didn't know it.
Oh, it looks... Oh, no, there's no cake.
Oh, wait, there's no cake there.
I thought it was
cake?
The one. There's a big one.
Can a brother get a piece of cake?
Happy first anniversary. And then it's me and Ty pointing at you.
Oh, at me?
Yeah, it looks really good.
It's the other show. It's a good one.
All right.
I like it.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah. Happy anniversary. Thomas in Germantown. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Thomas.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Thomas?
I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
I like to say Brett Brown did a good job.
Yes, he did. He adjusted.
And a lot of friends of mine have been talking, you know, about, and I just want, I really have a question. I hope you can answer this.
I hope you can ask it. Let's go. Come on. I'm like, I want to pull the words out of your mouth here, Thomas. Come on.
Okay. Now, I heard about O'Brien, people wonder why, you know, I keep talking about O'Brien. Could you tell me the history of him, you know, how long he's been here and what was his track record in the past?
O'Brien?
Yes.
Oh, Jim O'Brien?
Who are you talking about? Used to be the coach for the Sixers.
Who's currently their assistant?
Yes.
What do you want to know about him?
I want to know.
Why? What's it matter?
I want to know about his past. I mean,
he was a head coach in this league for a while, and I'm curious to know what's the question? What answer are you trying to get?
Was he a bad coach, or how did he coach?
He wasn't very successful as an NBA coach. What does it matter? I'm curious. Like, why are you so intrigued about Jim O'Brien, the assistant coach?
Because things that I heard about him.
What did you hear?
I heard that he wasn't too good of a coach to coach a lot of different teams.
Well, he did. But, you know, he's an assistant, so it really doesn't matter that much, right? He's a Philly guy. He went to St. Joe's.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Goodness.
What was that?
And he's been back for a couple of weeks.
He was just wondering.
All right, well, that's more of an email. Real fast, Mike.
What?
Jason. more of an email question. Jason Nark, who you had on, who's a big listener.
Yeah.
We had him on. Remember he wrote the article how he liked it better when we were underdogs after the Eagles won the Super Bowl?
Yes.
You had him on in the last
yes,
year.
Yes, I remember.
And he's nominating himself.
Oh, he's nominating himself.
As possibly being the best guest on social media.
Is he really?
He's joking.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I tell you what, he was interesting because he was like a non-sports guy
yeah.
who listens. He writes about non-sports.
Right.
So he's not the hardcore guy.
Yes.
I got to say, he was... I didn't know what to expect from that interview.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece was... And there were people who agreed with the piece, so... I yeah. think that might make the top five.
You think so?
I do.
I don't even remember who we had on, to be honest with you.
Well, it's we're hard. Not really like
that. The years blend into yet. Like, I can't yeah. separate, like, who we've had on in a certain year.
Yeah, we're not like a guest-driven show's about
yeah,
you.
No, we've had a lot of guests, though.
Yeah.
And we have some great moments. I just can't recall them. Because yeah. why? Because you're going to the next show. You know, you're never looking back.
Do we have anybody
if you
really
keep looking back? Somebody will pass you.
We have anybody random that was unexpected in the last year?
Flav.
He's not yeah, like he one. Was... He's 1 year, 1 week ago now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
He started the
anybody
Friday before level? The Friday before we started.
Well, you got to round that off. I can't Flav.
Flav was the most.
Flav. He counts.
I put Flav above Jason Narc.
There you go.
5 o'clock hour is coming up. Mike Misnelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, and the anniversary. NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.